is Corolla Digital.
Hi, folks. It's Larry. Larry Miller. That's right. And I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening. It means the world to us over here. And if you like the show, please tell a friend. That's right. Bring a friend over, and it will really help us grow. And it means a lot to everyone here. So please tell a friend. And, well, that means we'll be able to say for a long time, we'll see you here.
Your opinion is important. That's why we don't want you to miss the chance to take our listener survey at podcast1.com. You see, your responses will help us make this show the very best it can be. It's not a lot of effort because it'll only take you about 3 minutes, and you'll get the instant gratification that comes with knowing that you helped us get better. So do it now. Take the survey at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who just can't get out of a hotel room long enough to take a nice walk. Hi, folks, and welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And you know something? I say it every week, but it's true every week. Hearing that music, no matter how tired you are or cranky, always makes me smile and puts me in a good mood. So I hope you are, too. Of course, they get better every week. They really do. That's the William M. Meldrum Orchestra and the Martha Cooper Dancers, featuring boy tenor Bobby R. Goldsmith, asking the musical question, if you drive on a parkway and park on a driveway, what's the point of a causeway? Well, you know something? We all thought that was a pretty good question, and Colonel Jeff said, how about this one? That Bobby R. Goldsmith sent in, and I said, that's a terrific question. And it does make you think. If you drive on a parkway and park on a driveway, what's the point of a causeway? In fact, even when I was a kid or an adult now, I don't even know what a causeway is. Why call something a causeway? Does that mean it has a cause? It doesn't have a cause? What's the point of anything? And then I said, by the way, to Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris, I said, let's get other way jokes. There must be other way names, things like freeway. You know, well, does that mean it didn't cost anything to make? Why is it free? They don't charge you anything for it? And then Colonel Jeff said, or a henway. And I said, what? He said, a henway. I said, did you say a henway? And he said, yes. And like the biggest sucker in history, I said, what's a henway? And he said, about 8 pounds. And I'm glad to tell you, and he's glad to tell you, I did not strangle him then. I did not say, you know what, show or no show, freedom or not freedom, I've got to kill him right now. I did not say that. But that's a pretty good one. What's a henway? And then Dr. Chris, because this shows you the kind of people we have working here, including me, by the way. Dr. Chris said, you know, or it's like an up dog. And I said, a what? He said, up dog. And I said again, like the biggest sucker in history, what's up dog? And he said, oh, nothing much, just hanging out. And you know what? The three of us kind of smiled and giggled, and that tells you something about how we feel, which is really joyous, by the way. It's wonderful to smile and giggle. And that's, in many ways, the point of all of life. So I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad Bobby R. Goldsmith thought to ask us that. If you drive on a parkway and park on a driveway, what's the point of a causeway? Bobby, the answer is neither I nor Colonel Jeff nor Dr. Chris. No, we don't know. We have no idea what the point is of a causeway, but we're glad you asked. And by Amazon. That's right, Amazon. And by Amazon. We are brought to you by Amazon, and we're awfully glad of it. You know that you can go to Amazon on your computer, on your screen, on your watch, on your phone, anything in the world you want. You go to Amazon and get anything in the world you want, right? Wrong! You don't! You don't. You don't go to Amazon. What you do is you go to our website, which is LarryMillerPodcast.com, or as I've taken to saying it here, LarryMillerPodcast.com. So what you go is shaving a haircut, two bits, who's on the mountain, Tom Mix. But you go there, you go to LarryMillerPodcast.com, and we have a banner that says Amazon. You click on that banner on our podcast, it takes you to Amazon, brings you there in fine full metal, and you are all set. Then you order anything in the world you can possibly imagine, and part of the dough comes here and goes to us. And we're very glad of that. Amazon's happy. They send us a percentage of what you buy. You're happy. You get whatever you could possibly want. Amazon's happy because they're selling it. And we're happy because we get dough. And remember, not to be too complicated, dough is good. So thank you. Go to Amazon on our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com, which leads us into, at a good time, the joke of the week. That's right, the joke of the week. The weekly joke, otherwise known as the joke of the week. And this week, I was looking again. Colonel Jeff handed over his list of 100 greatest jokes. And he said, you haven't done this one, you haven't done that one. And then Dr. Chris came over and he said, hey, it's like this joke. I just thought of this one. And he told a joke, and we thought it was a very good one. And we all said, you know what? Let's do that. Let me tell that joke this week. So that sounded like LarryMillerPodcast.com. Let me tell this joke that week. So here's Dr. Chris's joke, and we think it's really good. So a guy is leaving work in his nice new fancy car. It's either a Mercedes or a big Lexus or something, and he undoes his tie for the first time that day. But that's how he knows he can relax. He put in a good day's work, and he's very successful. But he's going to go home now, and he's going to relax with his wife and children, and he's going to read the paper with a big, stiff drink, and he's going to be very happy. He's driving down the causeway, probably, and he sees on the side, though, up ahead he notices there's a guy about his age, about 40 years old, 45 years old, and he's on his hands and knees eating grass. He's eating the grass on the road, on the side of the road. He's eating the grass. And it's both puzzling and kind of annoying and really disgusting, frankly. And the guy's eating the grass on the side of the road. So the guy pulls over. He said, this is, wait, I got to find out about this. He pulls over, pulls his brand new fancy car off the road, gets out of the car and walks over and says, what in the world are you doing? And the guy says, mister, I lost my job and I have nothing and no money, didn't save any money, not making any money. And you know what? I'm hungry. And this is what it's come down to. It's come down to, well, eating grass on the side of the road. And if that's the way it's got to be, that's the way it's got to be. And the guy says, hold it. Stop talking. Stop saying all that now. I don't care what's happened to you. You're coming home with me, and you're gonna have dinner at my place. And the guy says, buddy, that's awfully nice, but I've got my family here, too. I've got my wife and 6 kids. That's them over there, and they're eating grass, too. They were on their hands and knees, and they're eating grass, too. And the guy says, stop them right now. I don't care what happens or what this is. You go, you get them. Everyone pile right in the car, and we're going right now to my place for your dinner, and that's that. And the guy says, gee, okay. And they drive down to his house. And as on the way, the guy driving says to him, boy, you're gonna love it over there. The grass at my place is like a foot tall. And that made us laugh. So it's one of those jokes of, gee, it seems like the guy's such a nice fella. You've got to come to my place for dinner. And what he's thinking really is, look, you can get your dinner. My grass is better. It's much longer. It's much fresher. Plus, this saves me the money on hiring a gardener. So, in any case, thank you, Dr. Chris. And as he said, that joke is, as my mom used to say, 1 year younger than God. So, in any case, that's a good one. Good thinking, Dr. Chris, there. which leads us into more good thinking, more wonderful thinking, in fact, because it's time to visit the Poetry Corner. That's right, the Poetry Corner, which, as you know, is the corner of poetry. And it's a wonderful place to be. I love going back to poems and finding new ones. And in this case, it's from an author I had never heard of. There's no reason you have to know every author, whether it's as a playwright, an essayist, a poet, or anything at all. And someone who writes novels for the last 100 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years. And this was a woman I had never heard of, but I'm glad I have now. Her name is Mary Elizabeth Fry, and she had a nice long life. She was born in 1905 and passed on in 2004. And she was many things in life, but she loved being a poet, and she became very well known for this one. And I'm glad I read it today, and I'm glad I can read it to you today. It's called Do Not Stand at My Grave and Weep. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am 1,000 winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sunlight on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. Isn't that nice? Isn't that lovely? I think it is, and we all do here. We think it's very lovely. Good for you, Mary Elizabeth Fry. And here's kind of a funny thing about it. Remember, she's born in 1905. She wrote this, I think it said in 1930 or 1932 or something. Think of how young she was at that point. She's 25 years old or 27 years old to write something this lovely. And the poem became well known, very well known throughout America, but not that she wrote it. It was very well known, and she lived her life doing so many things with love and family and work, and she was not known as the poet. And then somewhere in the 60s, in 1960 or later, no, it was in 1990, I think it said, on the Colonel Jeff is going to look back on the computer, but she then said, I wrote that poem, and this was supported by Abigail Van Buren, who herself just passed on about a year ago. She was Dear Abby in all those columns over so many years, and her sister was Ann Landers. This is another funny thing in American cultural life. The two sisters who became, well, two of the wisest, funniest, and most successful people who were known to give out good advice and answer letters. And Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, proved that, got the notice from Mary Elizabeth Fry and did prove that she did, in fact, write this poem, which made Mary Elizabeth feel very, very good. So I'm awfully glad that she's out there, that her work is out there, Mary Elizabeth Fry. That's F-R-Y-E. And you know what? We'll visit her again. I'm glad we did today, and I hope you are too. And that's our Poetry Corner visit. And before we do our next visit, I want to tell you about a lunch I had in Vancouver in Canada. I just got back last night. I finished the part, and it's a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie of the week called Mystery Cruise. And I think it might be just very good, terrific. But I'm glad to have done it, and there's other things to tell you about. But while I was up there, I was staying at a hotel in Vancouver where every actor in history has stayed. There are many things filmed in Vancouver, many movies, many TV shows, many, well, all sorts of things, many plays made. and all actors stay at the Sutton Place Hotel. And it's a fine place to be. I've been there. I'm lucky enough. I've worked there several times, and I've been there several times at this hotel. And I walked Friday morning. I was going to work, getting picked up to go to the set, and I saw standing outside there waiting to get picked up too was a great actor named John Polito. This is J-O-N-P-O-L-I-T-O. If you know the name, you know how great he is. If you don't know the name, you've seen him in a thousand things, many great movies, many great TV shows, and he's really, really very good. There are movies like The Freshman that he's in and Barton Fink and wonderful, great TV shows like Homicide. And one of my favorite parts he's ever done, excuse me, he was one of the stars of the great Coen Brothers movie, Miller's Crossing. Now, I think it was about 10 or 20 years ago, I think. But it's a great movie, no matter when it was made. If you haven't seen it, see it again. If you have seen it, I'm sure you've seen it many times. So I run into John, by the way, on the outside there. He's getting picked up for his part in his movie that he's doing, and we're not in the same one. And we said hello. We knew each other from something or other. So he said, oh, hello, hi, good to see you. Yeah, I'm going over here. Yeah, I'm going over there. And so we told each other what rooms were in there, and we said we should get together. I haven't really taken a walk. And I said, you know, you're right. I haven't taken a walk. My wife has been saying, get out of the hotel. Take a walk. Do something. It's a beautiful city. You like it up there. Take a nice walk. Make it a big walk. Make it a three-hour walk. And I said, you know, you're right. And so the next day, which was a Saturday, this is just a few days ago, the next day, John calls me in the room and says, hey, you know what? Let's take a walk. Let's take a walk together. Let's make it a big walk. We'll go down, this way. Then we'll go across that way. We'll go down Robson Street, which goes all the way. Then we can go across to the water and all around. I said, that sounds good. He says, let's have some lunch first. I'll tell you what, I'll meet you down. They have a nice bar restaurant there at the hotel. He said, I'll meet you down there at 1 o'clock. Sounds good. We go down to this restaurant. We sit there, and we're having some club soda with lime, and then we had just a simple lunch, a nice lunch, but they make nice things there. It was, whatever the heck it was. It was a thing with rice, and it was a thing with tuna in it wrapped in another green thing. It was just good stuff, and we're having a good time talking about life and show business, and I'm all dressed for the walk, and so was he, and we were there about an hour, and as we got up, and paid, and then we just walked back out into the lobby area, and we both thought the same thing, and we both said the same thing, and we both did the same thing. We both realized, let's head out and have a nice walk. And then I said to him, you know what? Just getting together and having a bite down here and coming down in the elevator and walking across the lobby and having some good food, that's kind of like a walk right there. I mean, that's kind of like a pretty good workout right there. And he laughed because he felt the same thing. We both just smiled at that and laughed and said, you know what? Close enough for me. So we said, well, let's take our walk later. So we both went back up to each of our rooms and did the same thing. I went into my room and slid off the sneakers and just got into the bed and watched some wrestling. And you know what? That was a pretty good after lunch nap and TV watch. That was pretty good. And John did the same thing. Whatever he watched, he went to his room. He took his sneakers off. He laid himself down there, and that was it. Good night, nurse. We didn't get out that day. We didn't go anywhere, but that's a good show business walk. I'm not lazy. I love to take a walk. Vancouver's a beautiful city. It's a wonderful place to walk around. But you know what? It was not going to be that day. And the reason I'm telling you that now, I had a great time just hanging out with him, and he's got such a distinctive voice. He's from Philadelphia. You've seen him in a thousand things. And I started to think about him in Miller's Crossing, which is a very good movie. It's a terrific movie. And oh, what a cast. Gabriel Byrne and Marcia Gay Harden and John Turturro and Albert Finney. So many terrific actors in that thing. And they're really very good, and it's very well directed, very well written. And John Polito plays the head gangster, one of the guys who takes over and becomes the big boss of this. And he's really good in it. And the part is great. But it made me think of Miller's Crossing. And thinking of Miller's Crossing helped me come up with what our next category is, really, that I love doing. The magic movie moment. And that's really something I enjoy. Magic movie moment. It's a scene or a moment or just a look in any movie that you really like, or even one that you're seeing the first time, and you realize you're going to see it again 5, 10, 50 times as the years go by. And every time you see it, you watch it, really, the whole movie, just for that one scene, because something about how well done it is makes it a magic movie moment. And there are many of them in Miller's Crossing, and John is in several, by the way. But the one that stayed out and the one that stood out for me and that always has and always will is where Albert Finney, who also plays the head of a gang, is in his big fancy house and his big fancy bed, and he's having a big fancy drink and a big fancy cigar, and he's in one of those old nice paisley silk robes in bed, and he's reading something, and he had put on a record, and it's playing an older recording of Danny Boy, which is a great poem, a great song, Danny Boy. You all know that. I won't bother to sing it. Next time we get together, if we go out first for a couple of drinks, then I'll sing Danny Boy. And that's playing, and it sounds like just what it is. It's an older recording from a record. And at that point, Albert Finney, who's a very successful gangster, just hears someone breaking in. Very gently, someone just comes in through a window in his house. But he knows what that is, and he just, with his finger, he kind of tamps the cigar down just to put it out. And he puts, if I recall correctly, he puts the cigar in the pocket of his silk bathrobe, and he picks up from the floor or from under the bed somewhere, he picks up a Tommy gun. And he calmly, now this is great acting, great directing, and great writing. The music is still playing. Now it becomes the under music for the whole scene. And he walks out. But the great thing about this scene to me is he's not scared. He's not vicious. He's not really thinking or overthinking as the character. He's just going to do the job he's really very good at. He walks out with the Tommy gun. There's one of the guys is in the house. It's a good scene where he kills the guy with the Tommy gun. The guy explodes. He falls down the stairs, whatever it is. Then he goes outside. The other fellas run to get back in their car. It's an older car from, did this take place? 1933, roughly, 35. They get in their car and they start to drive down the street. They're giving up. They've left. They're not going to kill him. They've given up and they're running away. So the scene's over, right? No, it's not over. Albert Finney strolls outside, doesn't run outside, walks outside, and with the Tommy gun, starts to fire after them as they go down the street. Now, they've got to be 200 feet away now, and they're running away. And Finney, or the character he's playing, Leo, manages to shoot up everyone in the car, and you see the car from 200 feet away on a dark, rich street. And suddenly the car just kind of veers off because the driver's been shot. It rears off and slams into a tree, not fast, just 20 or 30 miles an hour, but ka-chunk, bang into the tree. And we see a little flame start to lick, and Finney fires in a little more, and the car explodes, but not a giant explosion, not a ridiculous, too big explosion, just right. And I'm telling you, and then he looks after it, and I can't even remember whether the scene ends on him just looking after it or whether he starts to walk back inside. Folks, I'm telling you, though, that scene, start to finish, is not something that scares you. And I don't like being scared. I don't like movies that where you know there's just a guy holding a big knife up right around the corner. I don't like those scenes. But in this scene, I'll tell you, The way it's shot, the way it's conceived, the way it's acted, shot, and edited, it's really a magic movie moment. And you think, get a load of this guy, how good he is at this stuff. And then he just goes back inside, no doubt, to relight that cigar and finish his drink. And not because he's so mean, but just because, well, that happened tonight, and I'm fine, and who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. Now, does he go get the guys or call the police or have them buried? No, that's not the point of the exercise. So in any case, I wanted to tell you about running into John Polito and having a bite with him and not having our gigantic workout together of taking a stroll around the city. And it reminded me, having hung out with John, of one of his great roles, which is from a great movie, Miller's Crossing. So see that sometime if you haven't. See it again if you have. But there's a lot in there you might consider magic too. And you know what, by the way? It turned out to be a wonderful time in Vancouver. And all the things I had to get done and wanted to get done and was going to get done didn't get done, which is, again, one of those things I felt like Albert Finney in Miller's Crossing. Just, well, that's the way it goes. I'll kill them or they'll kill me. But none of these things got done. I mentioned I had a hamburger for lunch 3 weeks ago at a nice place, and there was a very nice waitress who was very sweet and had given me the change already and had taken money out of what I gave her for the meal, and I had left her more money and a tip. And she followed me down the street and kind of ran after me in ways to 50 or 100 feet, and was very sweet and said, "You left this on the table, but I already took it out of the money." And I said, "That's so sweet. Get a load of you for doing that." I said, "You've done your good deed for the day." And she smiled and waved and ran back inside. And I realized I hadn't given her a tip again. She gave me back the money, and I hadn't given her a tip. And she was so nice for chasing me down and giving me the money back. And I realized on my next run up there, because I came back home a couple of times for work in the middle of shooting this, and I said, on the next time, I'm going to go back to that place, have another burger and another Mediterranean salad, which is what I had, and then just give her the money from the last one and the money for the next one and some extra. I like tipping. I think it's a great thing to do and make someone feel good. Or I said, the heck with it, or I don't have to go in there for something to eat. I'll just go in there just to give her back and some extra, some money that I hadn't given her before because she was so nice to chase me down. And I knew I was just going to get back there and smile at her and say, "I just wanted to say hello, and I just wanted to give you this back, and you were so nice to run me down there, and you did a good deed there." But you know what? I didn't get down there. I didn't get out of the hotel. If I didn't get out of the hotel room with John Polito to take a walk, I didn't get down to go up a block to see this woman and say, "Thanks very much." I didn't get to do that. That's not something I got to do. And I was there another two trips a week at a point each time for another 2 weeks. And I kept thinking, I've got to get over there. But you know what? Some things, even though you mean well, it's in your heart to do it, I just didn't get there. I didn't take that walk, and I didn't get up there and give this young woman some extra money for being so nice. That's two things I didn't do. Here's an interesting thing. I was going to get to Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons is a huge chain all over Canada of coffee stores. When I first worked up there, I was in a movie, and I saw the Tim Hortons coffee, the coffee that was labeled Tim Hortons, on the set next to regular coffee and decaf. And I thought Tim Horton was a guy in the movie. I thought he was on the crew and that the coffee just said Tim Hortons because he liked his coffee his own way. And I didn't know. I saw the director in there. One of the other actors was going into the coffee. And they kept saying, "Well, why aren't you drinking the Tim Hortons?" And I said, "Because it's Tim Hortons. And I don't know him. And I think, frankly, it's wrong that you're doing this." And they thought, not surprisingly, that I was out of my mind. But then I found out that there are as many Tim Hortons as there are Starbucks. Well, not maybe not that many. There's nothing that's as many. There are more Starbucks than there are stars in the sky. At any rate, though, I wanted to get to Tim Hortons. I've still never had any of that coffee. I wanted to get there and have a sandwich for a lunch and a cup of Joe from Tim Hortons, whether it's regular or decaf. I didn't care. And I wanted to get to that, and I had plans to get to that every single time. And I kept passing on the ride to and from the movie set, wherever it was being shot that day. And I said to myself, well, there's another Tim Hortons. I've got to get to that one. And it was only, by the way, it was only 5-8 blocks away. It was nothing. It was nothing away. And you know what? I still didn't get to that. It was just the way life goes. I didn't get to it. I stayed in the hotel room. And when I left, which was last Sunday, when I left to come back home, when I finished the movie and I finished the part and the movie was done anyway, I went to the airport, and I know something about airports at this point, and they know something about me. And even though you've got to go through, well, customs and filling out forms and standing on lines and such, that's just the way it is. And I got into the area I know so well, the gate I had left from 5, 6, 7 times already on the same flight to come back home to back to Los Angeles. And there's a Tim Hortons there, too. And on this day, that Sunday, leaving, having finished and enjoyed the city so much and having enjoyed the part so much and the movie so much, and I thought, well, there's a Tim Hortons. I'm right here. I can do it right here in the airport. And they have food. They have sandwiches, and I was going to have a bite there anyway a couple of hours before my flight left. And I didn't do it again. This time there was, well, there was 15 people online there and two families, and I thought, I just don't want to. That's the problem with Tim Hortons. They're too successful. They draw too many people. And I just didn't want to wait on a line for 25 minutes just to do something I had planned to do so much, to try the Tim Hortons. So you know what? I didn't take the walk with John Polito. I didn't pay that waitress back the money that she was so sweet and came running after me to give me back. And I didn't get to Tim Hortons, even when it was standing there right in the airport, staring me in the same face I was using to stare at it. And I didn't get that either. I just didn't get that done. Went to Burger King instead, by the way, which is also in the airport. And you know how that was? The answer is, yes, you do. You know how that was. I'm glad they're very successful, and I'm glad people work there, and I'm glad it's all going well. But when you're sitting there with a double Whopper and a Coke at noon on a Sunday, you know what? It's okay. It's just okay. And that's as good as it's going to be, and that's fine. It's good that it's just okay. But I didn't get to Tim Hortons either again on the whole trip. And you know what? The last 4-5 days of shooting, we're not on the giant yacht anymore that the Boeings had built in 1930, the Taconite. And it wasn't on there anymore, which is fine with me. I'd have enough of the Taconite. But it was at a studio they had set up and built more of the boat areas to shoot on. And it was a studio, but that's a studio in quotes. It was inside a factory that was building some very specific things for the defense industry in Canada. They were glowing, they were radioactive, and they were being carved out of, you know, small and large pieces of metal. And why they chose the place, I guess they got a good rate on it, but it was the kind of place. Here's the kind of place that was. We're sitting around with actors. They put the chairs in a circle in a certain part of the factory. And one of the ADs that's assistant director came over to me on around the third or fourth day we were there and said, oh, by the way, there's an emergency eye wash in here. There are a couple of them. So if your eyes feel they need to get an eye wash, you just tell me and I'll show you where the emergency eye wash is. Now, that's the kind of thing, you would have done the same thing I did, which is when you hear that, it's the kind of thing where you say, what? I beg your pardon? What did you say? And she said, it's an emergency eye wash. And I said, well, why is there an emergency eye wash here? And she said, well, the things they build here. Some of the things, there are a lot of metal fibers in the air. There are a lot of metallic shavings in the air. And sometimes they really get to people's eyes. And they need to be washed out in more than just a sink way. So they have emergency eye washes like at a hospital. I said, how long do you have to be here before you need an emergency eye wash? And she said, oh, you have to just be, say, sitting in the same spot for 4 hours. I said, look at me. I'm an actor. I've been sitting in this same spot for 4 hours. And I said, how will I know? How will I know I need an emergency eye wash? And she said, oh, you'll know. And that's one aspect of working there. The other one was one of the walks I made from base camp, which is where they have all the trailers, through the factory, through the laboratories, to get to where the set was, I noticed two places that had these plastic little tiny huts that were showers that had the MASH print on it, which is that army lettering where it's not really neat, it's not really official, and it said on it, emergency showers. And I said to the same woman, the AD, I said, what's the emergency shower for? And she started to say again, well, sometimes there are things in the air here, not just the metal filings, but there are certain fibers that get in the air and you really want to get it off quickly. And I said, how will I know I need to get it off quickly? And she said again, oh, you'll know. And that was the last time I walked through that place. Everyone on the set, in the crew, all the actors, everyone there, producers, executives, everybody, to get back to the base camp, would walk out the nearest door and walk all the way around the building on extremely hot days in an area that was full of dust and dirt and past machines that were trying to cleanse the air that were outside the building, and they're trying to cleanse the air inside, and it stunk, and it was really hot. And it was really a terrible walk, but we all left where the filming was to walk past these things, and we all thought the same thing. Boy, the air is good here. This is better than being outside or inside where I might need an emergency eye wash, which I'll know because I'll just know before I take the emergency shower. It's like one of those Meryl Streep showers where you need a wire brush that someone's going to brush you down on. Holy mackerel. So, you know what? As it turns out, with everything that goes on in a place, it's such a nice thing to be able to say with all sincerity and full heart at the end of the job, you know what? I'm glad I had that job. I'm really glad I got that part. And I love working in Vancouver, all of which is true. And the fact that, well, I didn't take a walk with John Polito, and, well, I didn't get the waitress her money back there, and, well, I didn't take a walk anywhere, and, well, I didn't go to Tim Hortons, and, well, I had one walk where I went into a bookstore instead of walking. It was a half a block from the hotel. I spent an hour in the bookstore and then bought books and walked them back to the hotel a half a block. That was my big workout walk. And then I took off my topsiders, laid down on the bed, and watched wrestling. Same as every day. Same as after with John. So you know what, though? No matter what you do or don't do, I was so glad I was in that city. And that's a great thing to be able to have naturally in your heart, in your head, in your soul, to know when you leave, you know what? I'm looking forward to coming back to this city again. And that's sure true for me. I'm looking forward to the next part and the next big walk in Vancouver, because I know what you know. Folks, Homer is Homer, and Pluto is a planet. And as always, remember, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that's sure true. And you don't need a big walk to figure that out. We'll see you next time here. And remember, it's Larry Miller Podcast.com.
In Esperanto, we're available.